Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Movie Addict Headquarters with your host, Betty Jo Tucker, author of Confessions of a Movie Addict, right here at www.blogtalkradio.com.
Toto, I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore. That's right, Dorothy. This is Movie Addict Headquarters. You don't have to be a movie addict to visit here, but if you are one, it's definitely the place for you. I'm your host, Betty Jo Tucker, speaking to you from beautiful Pueblo, Colorado, on the 27th day of April, 2010. This is our last Nostalgia Month show, folks, and it promises to be one of the best. Our guest is veteran movie, stage, and TV star Ron Masak, who has agreed to talk about his inspirational and highly entertaining book titled I've Met All My Heroes from A to Z. And I'm so happy to see that Angela Lansbury is on his list. Ron worked with her for 8 seasons as Sheriff Mort Metzger on Murder, She Wrote, one of my all-time favorite television shows. Ron's appeared in 20 feature films and guest starred in, I can't believe this, but it's true, over 300 television shows. It's no wonder that he's often introduced as one of America's most familiar faces. He's equally at home on stage or screen and with Shakespeare or slapstick, because we verge often on slapstick. In this show, Ron should feel at home with us, too. So welcome to Movie Addict Headquarters, Ron.
Well, thank you. That was a wonderful interview, and good night, everybody. No, that was
enough. Stick around. There's more to come.
Oh, yes, there is.
We're so happy you could join us, and congratulations on your terrific book, Ron.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that very much. Yeah, it's an easy read. It's a nice, easy read, and for people who can't read, there's a lot of wonderful pictures of some great people in there.
That's true, and it's very, very user-friendly. You can just take a look at the table of contents, which, you know, goes from A to Z, and you've listed, I think it is about 84 heroes. So you can just go down the list and pick whoever you want to read about. I mean, it's not a book that you have to go from beginning to end. And, of course, I'm just, you know, I have tunnel vision because I'm mostly interested in movies and showbiz people. So it's just the kind of book that really, really appeals to me. And we will talk more about it in a few minutes. But first, let's see if Nikki Starr and Jazz Shaw are ready to help with the show. Nikki, are all systems go in the chat room?
Yes, ma'am, they are, and we're looking forward to the show.
Well, I'm certainly looking forward to it, and we want to thank you for doing such a good job with our chatters and also to the people who signed up for the chat and to all our other listeners, of course. We really appreciate it, and we always appreciate Jazz for taking time out of his busy political schedule to co-host. Jazz, say hello to Ron.
Hey, Ron, I want to give this a slightly different characterization. You called it an easy read. I was mentioning to somebody else earlier that this is like an ideal bedroom book, which is how I refer to it, because it's broken up so nicely. If you have it on your nightstand, you know, you don't have to read the whole thing at once. If you're tired, you can do like, you know, 15, 20 different people and then go to sleep, pick it up, and just hit it again the next day.
Absolutely.
That's
or the bathroom is a good place. It's a good place to read in the bathroom, too.
Well,
I don't want to limit it to the bedroom.
No, it could be read anywhere. It could be definitely. And I just want you to know, Ron, that Jazz and Nikki and I are grateful to Bear Manor Media, that's your publisher, for sending us copies of your book to, so that we could read it before today's show. And I know Jazz is eager to get things started with some questions about your book. So go ahead, Jazz. You have the floor.
It's hard to even know where to begin. As Betty Jo said, I work in politics, and I was really impressed that you had both the senior Bush and Reagan in there. And one of my own personal favorites, I do have to say, was amazing that you included Jimmy Doolittle, who in the modern era doesn't get probably his due sometimes in history. People start to fade away, and he was a really incredible person.
Well,
but,
if they ever see the movie 30 Seconds Over Tokyo, that's Spencer
exactly,
Tracy with Jimmy Doolittle.
You know, I'm afraid a lot of the younger generation doesn't catch that. You have had this extraordinary career that we were talking about earlier, all the different people you met, but what made you decide to compile this into a book? Why did you want to assemble something this way and publish it?
Well, most of my friends know that I'm a storyteller. You know, one story leads to another story, and I have been so blessed to work with so many wonderful people and then to meet so many wonderful people. In the foreword, it just tells you that I'm a street kid from Chicago, and I was born and raised in on the south side of Chicago, and never dreamed I would, you know, come to Hollywood to act, to meet all these people and then get to know some of them as friends and meet five presidents of the United States alone. I mean, that kind of a thing. So I've been blessed. And in the book, you know, I worked with Vince Lombardi, who is considered the greatest football coach of all time, and they named the Super Bowl trophy after him. I worked out with the Dodgers for 20 years with my own uniform because of a friendship with Tommy Lasorda. I mean, that kind of a thing. That doesn't happen in everyday life, and you can't write that script. Because if you do, they're going to say, you're a liar. So if they stood on the street corner and I started telling about people that I knew, if I didn't have those pictures in there to prove it, they'd call me a liar.
That's understandable. I don't even know where you would begin to answer this question, because so many of the people, a lot of them are not with us anymore, and I would
right.
have dreams of being able to have dinner with, like, Ingrid Bergman, for example. But out of all of them that you did include in the book, who would you say were some of the most fun or the most exciting that you got a chance to meet these people?
Well, they were all fun and they were all exciting. I mean, because, as I said, I was a street kid. The Ingrid Bergmans and the Susan Haywards and the Cary Grants and the John Wayne. I mean, those were people that I would go to the movie theater and watch, and they were bigger than life. And not only to get to meet them, but to work with some of them and just enjoy, you know, that part of the life. It's amazing to me. Charlton Heston. I mean, here's a man that I really think could have been the president of the United States if he chose to be. You know, if he wanted to be, because of his knowledge of our Constitution. And he was one of those, you know, I mean, there was Moses. There was Judah Ben-Hur. And there we were just shooting together, having fun.
You met two people who walked on the moon.
I mean, that's
kind of incredible to think about it, isn't it? I mean, you
yeah.
talked to two guys who left the planet.
Right, the first two guys to step on the moon, and we played some golf together. And Buzz and I still see each other often at different events. He's a skier and a tennis player and all of those things. So I do get to see Buzz a lot more than I do Neil. Every so often I'll get to see Neil. And the picture in the book is from an event that David Victor had up in the Northern California area. And it's always fun to see him. It's always fun to see Neil.
Well, I have to break in and say that I think your entry about Buzz Aldrin is one of Nikki's favorites. Nikki, if you're not too busy multitasking, could you tell Ron why you enjoy that entry so much?
Well, first of all, I had just gotten done watching Dancing with the Stars, and you know, Buzz is on it. And so it was
right.
neat, like, hearing that he just was so at the wrong place at the wrong time and not concerned about it at all whatsoever. And hi, I just loved it. I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
It was just great.
But Buzz walks straight forward at all times. He's got a strong back.
Yep.
And he's a wonderful storyteller, by the way, so I'm sure he's going to appreciate that, even though it's kind of a little put down, but it's true. I mean, everything in the
funny.
Book is true.
Well, to me, like, I took it for this way, and I really, really, really loved that story. And I took it this way. There was already a misunderstanding with the first guest as well, but then he just came in full military dress uniform, and this is what he wrote, slowly striding toward the ballroom, just as they left, like nothing happened. And just like here happened. I am. Oh, right.
I don't know what time zone he was in, but the dinner was over, and he was just arriving.
And he was being honored. He was being honored, isn't that right?
He was being honored along with Rod Steiger at the Navy Ball. And as we started dinner, and the two guests weren't there, a little panic started to set in. And as soon as the entree was almost over, Mr. Steiger did show up and apologize because there was another party going on in the hotel at the same time. He just went to the wrong party. So we sent out a search party looking for Buzz, thinking he might have done the same thing and showed up at the wrong party. And finally it came time to present the awards, and Steiger took his, and it was time for Buzz, and there was no Buzz, so we accepted on Buzz's behalf. I was emceeing the event, and so I finally said goodnight to everybody. Please stick around and dance, if you will, to the wonderful music. And as we were leaving, my wife looked at me as Buzz and Lois were on their way in, and she said, "Honey, do you think we should tell him it's all over?" And I said, "Honey, he found his way all the way to the moon."
So great.
It was great. It was a great story. And I, of course, I know you had a lot of political figures and sports figures, but my favorites deal with the showbiz people. I just was so excited to read about Elvis, about your Elvis Presley imitations, and what you thought about Steve Allen, and how you got a kiss from Ingrid Bergman.
Oh yeah,
and the way you talk about Donald O'Connor. Go ahead.
Oh yeah. Well, I've been blessed. I mean, these were all of the great talents of the business. In 1960, I toured the world doing Elvis for the All Army Show. And in 56, I guess, I started doing impressions of – I was always doing impressions all my life, but I started doing the new people because I wasn't good doing all the old people. I mean, there were always better impressionists out there doing the Bogarts and the Cagneys and the Lionel Barrymores and the Edward G. Robinson.
Smart.
So I always tried to do people that no one else was doing at the time. So they couldn't compare me to Larry Storch or John Biner or all the great mimics. So I was doing Elvis, and Gene Autry saw me singing, and he told Spade Cooley to put me on his show Saturday night. So I think I'm somewhere down in the books that I'm the first Elvis impersonator. I did it on Spade's show in about 1956, I guess, 57.
Oh, my God.
And then when I actually played where Elvis was stationed over in Germany, and had a lot of his friends come up and talk to me and give me little insights to him. So when I was doing the show and I finished, I wound up eventually going to California to do Ice Station Zebra, and he was filming Speedway right next door with Nancy Sinatra.
Ah.
And then on the Ice Station Zebra set, I would be doing impressions and this, that, and the other thing. So they decided it was time for me to go over and do Elvis for Elvis. So I did him in full Arctic gear. I had my full Arctic uniform on, my boots, my orange outfit, and everything else. So we went next door, and I kind of aped whatever he was doing. However he was standing, I stood. However he moved, I moved. And he finally figured out he was being had. Very polite, very handsome young man.
And Ice Station Zebra was where you met Grace Kelly, right?
Yes. We were one of the few films that were going on at the time at MGM. And Rock Hudson became the number one leading man at the time. And when Princess Grace was going to come and have lunch, they asked Rock if he would please join her and be the honorary Good Samaritan for MGM at the time. So he was having lunch with her while the rest of the guys were over having lunch in our little section and teasing him all the way. She was an incredibly beautiful woman and with a great sense of humor.
And another beautiful woman, Ingrid Bergman. How did you happen to get that kiss from Ingrid Bergman?
Well, when I first came out to California, I was a sneak. I would sneak on sets where I knew people were filming so I could try to learn that craft a little bit. I knew enough about nightclubs and theater. I really wanted to learn about the films. So I would try to sneak on and watch people film as often as I could. And just as they were finishing up the scene and she was getting ready to leave, while the set lights went out, so it was kind of dark, and she started to trip over a cable. And I just happened to be there, and I grabbed her, and she was very grateful and planted one on me, so I can always say I held Ingrid Bergman in my arms and got a kiss for her.
Oh, wow. That's That is great.
She had the cleanest, clearest skin. I mean, she was, you know, and that wonderful Nordic stride of hers. She was beautiful.
Oh, yes. Well, they claim she had no pores, is what they claimed. We did one of our shows this month in tribute to Ingrid Bergman, so she's one of our favorites. And another favorite of mine, who doesn't get mentioned very much anymore, but I really applaud you for including him in your book and for mentioning that he was the one true genius that you met. And, of course, that's Steve Allen.
And unfortunately for me, I was trying to proofread so fast because I wanted to get the book out in time for my children for Christmas. I wanted to give them each a Christmas. That's how I actually started writing it for it, a little memoirs to give my family so they would know that I met these people and a place to put all the pictures. Steve to me was probably the number one genius in our business. When you stop and you think, he wrote books, he wrote plays, he wrote music, he was a comedian. He was a musician. He was an actor. I mean, people forget how good he was until they see the Benny Goodman story. He was actually the creator of The Tonight Show. He was the first host. People forget all of that. But every day he had a little tape recorder. And he would literally write a song every day.
And that's how he wrote over, 8,000 songs or something? I think he's in the Guinness Book of Records as the person who has written the most songs.
Right. He had a great eye for talent. I mean, when you stop and you think, he discovered Andy Williams and Steve and Edie and Tim Conway and Don Knotts and Poston and all of those guys, Louis Nye. He discovered all of those people and had them on the show. And just an incredible eye for talent.
And then that wonderful series that he had on TV, Meeting of the Minds, that he did with his wife, Jay.
Actually,
Jay
I was
Meadows,
just with someone, and I think they're gonna try to bring that back. Not with him, but
really?
They're gonna try to bring that format back.
Oh, that would be I would be so happy if they would do that. I also applaud you for giving credit, so much credit to Donald O'Connor. I think you called him the greatest all-round talent, or one of the greatest all-round talent.
Yeah, one of the. I mean, he and Mickey Rooney, I think, those were the two guys who could just really do it all. But Donald, when Donald was a child star, he was in vaudeville. But if Donald O'Connor did nothing in movies but dance, he would go down as one of the five greatest dancers. If he did nothing but sing, he would go down as one of the best singers. If he did comedy, he would be Francis the Talking Mule helped save Universal a second time.
That's
and then
right.
He was very dramatic. If you see, there's no business like show business. He was a drama star, but he was wonderful. We did a show one time, and I mentioned to him that one of my mother's favorite singers was a man named Buddy Clark. That was before my time, and he was a great mimic. And he got up that night and did a whole tribute to Buddy Clark, singing in Buddy Clark's voice. That's how good Donald was.
Oh my gosh! He was talented. There's no doubt about it. That Make 'Em Laugh song, dance number that he did in Singing in the Rain is just absolutely a classic, and it's funnier
every
time.
A lot of people don't know this. That was such an exhausting number that when he finished it, he actually went to bed for like 3 days, and he did it in one, basically, and then they lost that film, and he had to go back and do it again.
Wow!
And he did. And he did.
Oh my God!
That must have been a terrible ordeal. You know, Betty Joe, we're talking about all these other wonderful actors, and I would hate to skip over the fact that Ron has such a body of work in his own right, which you alluded to earlier.
Good point,
Ron. Maybe you could, instead of all these other famous people and your heroes, you can be a hero for some of us. You've done a ton of work, both the small screen and the big screen. Could you share with us a couple of your memories? What would you say your favorite roles have been, both in movies and in television? Are there any high points for you from each?
Well, obviously in television, he would be Sheriff Metzger on Murder, She Wrote.
Yeah.
I got to work with the Rolls Royce of our business. Angela Lansbury is she's just an incredible human being. And I always, that's how I would introduce her, as the Rolls Royce of our business. She, I never saw her angry. I never saw her unprepared. I never saw her late. Very giving. She would greet all our guest stars and say, "Hey, I'm here every week. Do your thing." So that was a highlight. I love that. I love the fact that two of the films that I am in, no matter how small the role are classics, Ice Station Zebra and Tora, Tora, Tora. I had a lot of fun doing Harper Valley PTA with Barb Reedon. enjoyed that very, very much. We shot that on location. That kind of thing. I love those things. The one I'm getting ready to do, I'm doing two films in the future. One is called, I'm doing a cameo in a thing called My Trip to the Dark Side, written by Shane Stanley. And we're going to do that next week. And then sometime this summer, we're supposed to start Mark Twain's greatest adventure, It's a Matter of Time. And I'm looking forward to playing Mr. Twain on film.
Oh, I can hardly wait to see you do Mark Twain on film. And you've done so many, like you say, you started out doing impressions.
Mm-hmm.
And my gosh, you've done so many of those. I was checking on that. You did Lou Costello for some commercials.
I did five commercials. Yeah, I did five commercials as Lou Costello. And a terrific story, I think, is Lou's daughter, Chris, and I became very good friends. She wrote a book called Lou's on First. And from that
Lou's
book,
on First.
Yeah. From that book, they wrote a play with me in mind to play her father, which was a wonderful play. And I got to do him. And then when people saw that, they decided to do some commercials. And I got the first one, and I invited her on the set. I invited Chris to come down on the set. And the whole time that she was there, I never broke character. I stayed in character for about 3 hours without taking off my hat, without becoming Ron Masak at all. And when the director called us over to look at the monitor to see some of the things that we were doing, one bead of sweat rolled down my face from under the hat. And Chris gasped. And I said, what's the matter? She said, the last time she visited her dad on the set, the same thing happened. One bead
really?
Of sweat came down his face. So she always called me Daddy, too, you know.
Oh, that is a sweet story. And of course, your Elvis impersonations. And what about George Burns? Didn't you do some commercials with George Burns?
Yeah, I did a commercial for shower massage. Cute story about that is the fact that I actually did it when we went in for the audition. I did his act. Rich Little obviously did a better George Burns. He was doing it on the Dean Martin shows and the Tonight Show and something like that. But I got to do George's act, so I had everybody laughing. And I got hired that day. And so the next day I go in, and I'm waiting, and the pianist is there. And he said, Ron, you want to run over the music? I said, what music? He said, well, let me give you music. I said, no.
I
said, oh,
no.
My God. And he said, George is on his way here. And he doesn't like to wait if he's, you know, we're ready. So we started going over the music. So the fact that I never talked like him on camera, I sang like him.
Oh, no.
And he comes in and he said, the boy's good. But why take an impression when you get the real thing?
Now, not everybody you met was in Hollywood. As we already pointed out, they were astronauts and other things. There was one really exceptional one, probably to many people, that I did want to ask you to just share a couple of your thoughts about. You met the Pope. And could you just tell us just very briefly, you know,
well,
how that came about and what your impressions were?
Well, we were in his company a few times, my wife and I. The first time I was doing a television pilot in New York called The Neighborhood, or Breslin's Neighborhood, as they sometimes call it. And we were staying up in Manhattan, and my wife was expecting our last child, and he was coming to New York for the first time. And it was dark, and it was rainy. And I told her, I said, honey, you know, they're not letting people even drive into Manhattan. What chance do we have of seeing the Pope? And she said, well, we're going to chance it anyhow. So we walked down in the dark, St. Peter's Cathedral, and sure enough, it was raining, and it was a little damp. We stood out there, and we heard the entire Mass from outside the church, and the minute the doors opened and he came out, the sun came out.
Oh.
And he blessed us, and he gave us all of the, talked to us for a little bit, gave us a blessing, went back in, and the minute he went back in, it started raining again. So you all stood there for whatever reason, not going anywhere. And all of a sudden, he opened the door on a window on the second floor. And he said, you can all go home now. I'm going to have my lunch. Oh, he was wonderful. And then my wife got to see him at Dodger Stadium and in parades and things like that. And then she got to go to Rome. And she was there and had a private audience with him. And as she's getting ready to leave here, this is the part I keep saying, if you read this story about my wife, ask me about the Polish tea cakes. My wife is a great baker, a great cook, and she's making Polish tea cakes. I said, what are you doing? She said, I'm going to give these to the Pope. We're going to have an audience with the Pope. I said, well, honey, he's not going to eat that. I mean, they tried to shoot the poor man. They're not going to let him eat food from anywhere in the world. And she said, well, I'll put the recipe in there, and his cooks can do it and all of that. Huh. Like a long story short, she got there. She tells the Swiss guard that she brought these cookies from the United States of America that she baked for the Pope. And he was flabbergasted. He said, you made cookies for the Pope? Nobody makes cookies for the Pope. So he sent her to another guard, who sent her to another guard, who sent her to the chief guard, and they all had that same expression. Nobody does anything for the Pope. They led her down. She went down to this red carpet right next to the throne and placed her Polish tea cakes next to the Pope's chair. So now, about 3 or 4 weeks later, after we laughed at her for doing this, she gets this wonderful letter from His Holiness thanking her for the Polish tea cakes.
Oh, that is so
wonderful.
Wow. I love that. I love that story. Yeah. That is really great.
Go ahead.
Oh, my. I think we've been neglecting Nikki and the people in the chat, so we want to give them a chance to raise any questions or make any comments. Nikki, anything you'd like to report from the chat for Ron?
Everybody's just loving the show, and it's Murder, She Wrote is like the biggest thing that they love you for in the chat.
Oh, thank you.
You have tons of fans there in the chat that love Murder, She Wrote.
I appreciate that. I always I told Angela many times that I said I know what Ed McMahon felt like with Johnny Carson, where they would ask him every day what's it like to be, you know, what's she like. A day of my life does not go by where someone doesn't ask me about Angela. Not one day of my life.
I think that would be that's a compliment to her and to you for the time that you spent with her. You talked in your book about how she was so good about bringing in guest stars.
Oh yeah, I mean, she rejuvenated so many careers. I always like to talk about Jerry Orbach, who had been on Broadway more than any actor in the history of the world. He made more.
And he was wonderful.
Than anybody, and the public per se didn't really know him until he played Harry McGraw on Murder, She Wrote.
Right.
And then they did a spinoff. That was the only real spinoff that ever came from Murder, She Wrote, was Harry McGraw. What did he say?
He was on Law and Order, too, correct?
Oh, yeah. Well, he wound up going on that for 12 years. God rest his soul, and everybody in the world knew him. And he was a wonderful, wonderful man.
And he was a great musical star, too.
Absolutely. I mean, she brought all of the MGM stars, the Van Johnson and June Allison in the same show. Herd Hatfield, who she did Picture of Dorian Gray with. I mean, she, Len Carreyrou, who was a star on Broadway in Little Night Music, and George Hearn, who, you know, the Broadway stars. She would bring them and give them a presence in your home on television where millions of people could see their work at the same time. And Peter Fisher, who created Murder, She Wrote, between the two of them. I mean, they did. They brought so many people back into the eye of the public that I loved.
Oh,
I wanted
to
ask you, Ron, do you still, to this day, are there many of the figures in the book who are still with us that you still keep in touch with fairly regularly?
Yeah, everybody who's still with us, I stay in touch with at all. I email Angela often. She's on Broadway right now, as you know, doing a Little Night Music.
I did not know that. The last I heard, she was doing Blythe Spirit. So,
well, she won
so
a Tony for that, and now she's going to probably win a Tony for this one, too.
Oh,
I mean, friends of mine who have been able to go see her, they just said she's incredible, and the audience just loves her.
Oh, she is, and I would love to have her on Movie Addict Headquarters because she has so many fans. You do on Blog Talk Radio. So we're going to keep trying with that. But, you know, you talked a little bit here about Broadway, and we forgot to mention your experience that you had on stage. You played everything from Stanley in A Streetcar Named Desire and Sacchini in Tea House of the August Moon to Will Stockdale in No Time for Sergeants and Antony in Julius Caesar. And then didn't you have two roles in Mr. Roberts? You want to talk a little bit about your stage work?
I played Ensign Pulver in college, and then when professionally I got to do Mr. Roberts. So that was just showing the two sides of the coin. And oddly enough, people that knew me, I mean, Ensign Pulver was easy for me because that was me. And, you know, an energetic, full of P&V and having a good time. And Roberts, I did as a tribute to Henry Fonda. Basically, I just hung my hands at the sides and picked up a little kind of a Nebraska accent or a Midwest accent and went with it. And I had a wonderful time. Sacchini, I think, was probably one of my favorite things to do on stage.
And that was from Tea House.
Tea House of the August Moon, right.
Yeah. And so that would be your favorite role on stage.
Well, I loved it because he was an interpreter. So I had to speak both Lushuan and English and had a good time. And my wife made me a wonderful jacket. If anyone goes to my website and they look at some of the pictures, she made me a wonderful jacket that looked like burlap. And it took her a long time to do it. And I've kept it. I'll never do that role again, but I kept it.
Betty Jo, we need to bring Nikki back on for a second because there is yet another question coming in about America's Sheriff.
All right.
Okay.
Nikki, you're on.
I lived most of my life in Arizona, and I actually have met Joe Arpaio, not introduced like you did, but he was at the state capitol, and I had the privilege of like getting to hear him speak, and he's wonderful, and I just love him to death. Well, you got to meet him, and I read that your Murder, She Wrote character was based on him.
Well, that's not
okay.
true. The joke of the thing was the first time I met him, he sent one of his deputies over to meet me. He said, the sheriff would like to meet you. And I said, I am the sheriff. He said, no, Sheriff Arpaio would like to meet you. And so I went over to say hello to him, and his first words to me was, I hear you're famous. He said, I'm famous too. I said, well, what's your definition of famous? He said, well, you tell me. Well, I said, he said, I've been on Larry King's show. I said, okay, I'm seen in 90 different countries, so I guess that means we're okay. And from that point on, we became very close friends. I'm a member of his posse in Maricopa County, but I have a great deal of respect for him. Somebody wrote a book called America's Toughest Sheriff about him, and when we left the party that night, he said, if they ever do the movie of me, I want you to play me. I said, okay, as long as we don't stand too close if they're shooting. But the story, I think that the story I put in the book is while we were there, some reporter came over, and he can be abrasive to people. You know, he's one of those people that you really respect a lot or you don't like him for whatever reason. But I have a great deal of respect for him for what I'm about to tell you. The reporter came over and he said, don't you think it's inhumane for you to keep people in tents in prison, in jail, in this heat, keeping them in tents? And he looked at the reporter and he said, we have young men and women over there in Iraq in full military gear with flak jackets, and they're in tents. And I didn't see one word in your paper about that.
Wow.
That's right.
Job is to incarcerate these people, not to judge them. They're judged, and they're sent to prison. My job is to make sure they get rehabilitated. So I respect that in Joe Arpaio.
Yes, well, I think you're an honorary sheriff of Tarzana, aren't you?
I've been the sheriff of Tarzana for over 30 years, but I think I'm an honorary sheriff. I'm an honorary sheriff around the country too.
Well, I'm glad the story that Nikki told didn't end with Nikki being arrested by Sheriff Arpaio.
Yes.
We get a lot of listeners. Betty Jo has a lot of fans who are either involved in the industry or want to get involved in the industry. And, Ron, you have such a long history working in every aspect of acting. Do you have any advice for the younger people who are interested in getting into acting and into show business that you'd like to share?
Yes. Continue to do your work whether people are watching or not. Learn. I used to tell kids years ago, you know, the best acting class in the world is the street corner. if you stand there long enough, you'll watch everybody you're ever going to play walk by. To me, an actor role, you know, an acting role always starts with your feet. It starts with your walk. It starts with your, you know, the insides. And then it continue to learn and do. There is no one school of acting. I was blessed. I had a director in college who was a protege of John Gielgud and a graduate of RADA, the Royal Academy of Dramatic Art. But he also believed in the Actor Studio, which was hot at the time. But people forget that before the Actor Studio, Marlon Brando didn't really learn his craft at the Actor Studio. He learned it from a lady named Stella Adler. She was his drama coach, his teacher, and other great stars. And what happened at the studio was because they came out of it and were quite successful in changing the way film acting was, he and Dean and Montgomery Clift, that everybody thought you had to do it that way. And you don't. I mean, no one was better in film than Spencer Tracy. No one was better in film than Paul Muni. You want to learn how to act? Watch Charles Laughton. I mean, acting is the ability not to get caught doing it.
Good. That's really good. I think we have a call. Let me check and oh dear, I think we lost him. Well, maybe the caller will call back. I am so impressed with all your work too that you've done with humanitarian projects, and I want to congratulate you on that. You've hosted the Jerry Lewis Telethon and you received the Humanitarian of the Year Award from the Muscular Dystrophy Association. You've been the field announcer for the Special Olympics. You were named Man of the Year by volunteers assisting cancer-stricken families. And you host golf tournaments for groups like Child Help USA, which I understand you're still a worldwide ambassador. Is that correct?
Yes, I am. Yes, I am. And I'm becoming a worldwide ambassador for autism, too. We're doing a tournament the next couple of weeks to try to fight autism, which is now getting more attention than we need more attention on it, too, because no two children with autism have the same problems. So we're throwing a light on that one as well.
And I think it's important. With anybody, Angelina Jolie, so they're both like worldwide ambassadors for good causes. So the two of you ought to go on tour together, Ron.
Brad doesn't want me. I'm too good looking.
Ah, there could be the threat factor. Yes, I didn't think of that.
Yeah.
And you do? Are you a golf player? I mean, do you like to play golf? Is that how you get the hosting position for the golf tournaments?
Yeah, we do. I do a lot of golf tournaments and ski. American Airlines has a couple of events every year that I do. One is their ski event up in Vail, Colorado, and then in Newport Beach they do one for Susan G. Komen. The ski event is for cystic fibrosis, and I see where charity money goes and how it develops. When we started doing that tournament, there were three young ladies whose lifespan was only supposed to be 15 years. Now they're all college graduates. So it prolongs. All of the research money is going to such good that we see the results of it. And I've always felt that if you were important enough to be called a celebrity by anybody, if you didn't give back to the community, it wasn't worth having.
That's great. Yeah, I think that's an excellent point. And I just don't know where you find time to do all of the things that you do. And you get these MC gigs all over the country, it seems like. Do you enjoy being an MC?
Absolutely. You know, just get on, get off, and get it done. George Burns said we can't prevent getting older, but we can prevent being old. In other words, have something to do every day of your life and enjoy what you do. I enjoy my family so much and my faith and what I do for a living. I mean, we get paid to play cops and robbers and cowboys and Indians and get to be somebody different all the time, and it's a lot of fun.
Well, it is, and it sounds like you are having fun with what you do. Here's a question that we always ask our guests, and we'd like to know what's the most important thing you want people to know about you and your work. I think we have some idea, but is there anything else you'd like to add on that score?
I mean, it's just that I truly enjoy what I do. be realistic about who you are and what you are. When I first came to California, I was a leading man in theater. But I was aware of what I looked like. When people say, "Are you Lou Costello's son?" So I knew I wasn't going to get all those roles that were going to the Marlon Brandos and things like that. So I decided just to have fun and do whatever I did, do it to the best of my ability, and hope someone in my business liked it. So when I'm through, I just hope I brought a smile to someone's face at one time or something memorable. It's like today when people walk up and they say they really enjoyed me on Murder, She Wrote, that's important to me. That's nice because that showed that they took an hour of their time to sit down and enjoy something I do. We never assume that somebody's watching us. And when I found out that both President Reagan and the Bushes would sit down and watch 60 Minutes and Murder, She Wrote every Sunday, I mean, that floored me. When George C. Scott walked up to me one day and started quoting lines that I did on a summer series, that floored me. Because we don't expect these other people to be watching our little pittance of work.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
and we're
I've been watching
almost
you.
Out of time. Betty Jo's going to hate me for doing this. But I do want to ask you one more thing, Ron. With your extensive history and you've watched this evolution of the art form on both the big and little screens over the years, in your opinion, looking today and looking back over the history, do you think movies and television are getting better, or do you think that things are going downhill?
No, I think they're going downhill, and I'll tell you why. I get up every morning very early, and I answer mail, and I do things like that, but I turn on the Turner Classic Movies, the ones that were in the 30s and the 40s, and you can't beat those films. And I don't like car crashes and vulgarities, and I like a story with a beginning, a middle, and an end. And
welcome to the club. That's exactly the way I feel, and I'm so glad that you feel the same way.
And kids today they don't have a chance because they're doing all the casting on the internet, so you don't have a chance to go in and sell yourself. They're looking for something off the internet, and that bothers me as well.
Yeah, it's certainly a different world now in showbiz. And I see we're almost out of time, but I want you to know that you have been a great guest, Ron. It's such fun talking with you. You have so much information to share. And I urge all our listeners to read your terrific book. And I think if they go to MASAK.com, they'll be able to see a little bit more about you and about the book. And we do have a copy of the book cover on our site, which you can click, and it'll take you right to Amazon.com. So wish you great success with all of your exciting projects, and we hope you'll come back and visit with us again soon.
Anytime, Betty Jo, you just call me.
I will do that, but bye for now.
Yes, Nick, bye-bye.
This is Betty Jo Tucker giving a big shout-out to all the folks at Blog Talk Radio for their support in connection with this show. Special thanks to Nikki and Jazz for everything they do to make Movie Addict Headquarters such fun to host. And thanks also to our chatters, and I'm sorry that we didn't get to the callers today, but there was just so much to talk with Ron about. And thanks to all our other listeners. We hope you enjoyed the show. Please come back next time for another lively discussion about movies. In the meantime, don't you forget to check out our film reviews at realtalkreviews.com. That's R-E-E-L, realtalkreviews.com. Now, as usual, to close the show, here's the talented A.J. Daniels with the song we dedicate to all our wonderful Blog Talk Radio listeners, and today especially to Ron Masak.
shall love you.